And instead of Mr. Bernard Smith, I'm going to say our good friend Burn Smith will now present his address, The Paradoxes of AA. Burn.
Members of the convention. You who have left your homes throughout North America to journey to St. Louis in the heat of the summer did not come in search of sobriety. For if this were your purpose, we need not have convened here these last 3 days. That we who have been here have drawn inspiration out of this great moment in the rich history of AA we cannot deny. But the fact is that you who are here have attained sobriety and have already found within AA the means for preserving it, and with it a spiritual acceptance of the work. Even though it is still a world cluttered with materialistic ideals. So, in the last analysis, you are not here to minister to your own sobriety, but rather in keeping with your concept of service to ensure that the structure of AA with which you fought your way back to life is rendered indestructible. That so far as we here are solemnly able so to provide, to ensure that this proven means of your own survival is preserved for the survival of generations of alcoholics yet unborn. Sobriety may not be threatened by what we do here and what we have done here. But if we fail in our efforts to insulate the structure of AA from human fallibility, millions of people destined to alcoholism will never find the key that can unlock the door of their alcoholic dungeon. Just in the broadest sense, we are here to ensure that our simple offer of human deliverance from a spiritual sickness that once wrecked your minds and your bodies remains open for all people, for all time, to accept or reject. This completion of the structure of AA today is therefore akin to a collective 12th step, an assurance by this first generation of AA to succeeding generations that this great spiritual being for attaining and maintaining sobriety is preserved for their use and their liberation. There's another reason, however, why we who are here must endeavor to ensure that for all time the structure of AA never crumbles, nor its message is distorted. I, in all humility, see the second reason perhaps more clearly than those of you to whom AA has become not only a way of life as it is for me, but in the first instance, a means of deliverance from the dread disease of alcoholism. Some of us who become accustomed to sobriety may overlook the message to society that is implicit in those tenets of faith, the following of which lifted us from the descending path that led to dissolution and destruction to the spiritually ascending one that led to sobriety. For we in the great laboratory of AA I've established as a basic truth for this materialistic age that living in terms of human decency, of honesty, of your neighbor and friendship is the true life. And that living by the materialistic ideals of a society that almost destroyed us is the illusory one. And the visible evidence of this great truth, hammered out of your suffering and your deliverance, is a truth we must preserve, so that a world which suffers from social ills that may not take on an alcoholic form may know that there is a truth that affords deliverance to them as it has to you. I am showing you the privilege of being of AA, although not in it. I have been spared the agonies of alcoholism. And yet, during these years in which I have been permitted by your grace to serve as chairman of your General Service Board and of your annual service conferences, I have been exposed as few so-called non-alcoholics have been to the enduring message of AA, and with it an understanding, I trust, of the depth of the suffering of the alcoholic and the principles of living which ended this suffering and brought sobriety. And so, as one who served, this afternoon I serve not only those AA here assembled, but also your countless brothers and sisters who have been restored to life through AA, whose hearts are here in St. Louis, though 1,000 miles away. In keeping with this concept of service, I must, in talking with you this afternoon, speak in terms of the totality of the collective experience of all of AA as I see that experience. And so I shall use the words we and us to identify my remarks with all alcoholics who've been restored to life through AA, rather than the word you, which could mean only those of AA here assembled this Sunday afternoon. In the sharp line that is drawn between the illusory life that most men live and from which we were liberated, and the real life which we now live, there is found many paradoxes. Take the simple statement, I am an alcoholic. In our civilization, an alcoholic is an individual who, while consuming alcohol to excess, ceases to be able to function effectively by socially accepted standards of behavior. But when we stand before our brothers and our sisters and say with conviction and with faith, I am an alcoholic. We say this at a time when we are not drinking and will not, God willing, drink again. So that the first time a man or woman stands before us and says, I am an alcoholic, he says it. But he is no longer drinking alcohol. But when the time comes that we describe ourselves as alcoholics, society ceases to regard us as such. And yet it is only at this moment, when we cease to drink, that we assert the right to describe ourselves as alcoholics. When we lived in terms of the society for which we were liberated, and that society in the years of our excessive drinking referred to us as alcoholics, we refused to accept this description and definition. And yet when we, for the first time having ceased to drink, cried out to ourselves and to the world in all humility, we are alcoholics, that society ceased to define us as such. Someday, when dictionaries are again revised, some bright man will have to coin a word for us to define an individual who once drank too much, no longer drinks at all, and yet talks of himself as an alcoholic. After all, there are enough of us now to warrant one small line in the dictionary. Yes, that great statement, I am an alcoholic, is a paradoxical one indeed. Paradoxical because it is a great truth. With implications that a materialistic society can neither comprehend nor ever define. It is a truth I cannot leave with this simple observation. For in these words, I am an alcoholic, there is an enduring message to a sick society. How can one who has not suffered the tortures and racks of the alcoholic know what it means to be one? How can one who has not spent his life trying desperately to live with alcohol know what it means to renounce it with these magic words, I am an alcoholic? What an unthinking world may look upon as defeat, we know is a triumph. A triumph of the spirit. A triumph of humility over false pride and self-centeredness. How few human beings will ever have the courage to stand up before their neighbors and in all humility say, this is what I really am. Bound as most of us are by the tyranny of conforming to materialistic but unfortunately socially accepted ideals, most of us are far more interested in the picture we present of ourselves to that society in keeping with those ideals than to acquire the humility to present the picture of ourselves to this society as we really are. And so, when we say with conviction and with faith, I am an alcoholic, there is a total renunciation of the illusory world in which our alcoholism was nurtured. And we will sit before our suffering brother as he sounds the words, I am an alcoholic, followed by the story of the false idols now renounced. Our hearts leap with the joy of knowing that our brother who was lost has been found again. He may slip, he may falter, but nothing can take away from him or from us that moment of acceptance by him of himself and acceptance of him by men and women who, because of their own suffering, understand what it means for an alcoholic to stand before his brethren and say, I am an alcoholic. And the joy of his deliverance strengthens all of us. For he is our brother, and he has been returned to us even as we have once been returned to our brothers and sisters. There are two moments in which the utterance of the word, I am an alcoholic, has great significance. The moment of which I have talked is the moment when and where meeting one of us for the first time stands before an assemblage of others and says, I am an alcoholic. There is another and earlier time which is of perhaps greater significance. And that is the moment when we say to that man or woman who is our sponsor, in the darkness and desperation of our souls, I am an alcoholic. And this first moment, when this statement is made, points to a second paradox in AA. In ordinary social usage, we accept as the principle of giving that one who helps his neighbor does so because of his superior social and financial position, and therefore because of his own strength should help the weaker members of his community. We are inclined to think in terms of leaders of political and business life, visiting hospitals and homes, to cheer and help the sick and the enfeebled. When the society from which we in AA were liberated thinks of the concept of help thy neighbor, it thinks in terms of the socially and financially strong, human beings, secure people, organizing philanthropic movements to help the weak and the afflicted. Now, I do not decry these socially accepted concepts of help thy neighbor. But the paradox in AA is that we do not approach our suffering alcoholic brother from the superiority and strength of our position, but from the realization of our own weakness. We talk to him not of our strength, but of our weakness. We tell him of the days when we suffered, even as he is suffering now. We do not boast of our strength in overcoming alcoholism, but speak of our great weakness in being unable to conquer it. We talk not of how misguided he is, but of how misguided we were. We talk not of his shortcomings, but of those which were ours. We sit not in judgment of what he is, but in judgment of what we once were. It is perhaps because at the moment of contact with our suffering brother, his thinking is still couched in terms of a society in which the inability to manage alcohol is socially accepted as a weakness, that we who were once too in terms of that society judged as weak are able to do so much in reaching him. He is at that moment much like an embryo bird that has just grown its wings and pokes its head through the shell that has been its world and looks for the first time at the freedom of the great blue sky in wonder. But the sky is wondrous to behold still in terms of the instincts developed by the environment of the world of the shell that still encases it and from which it is slowly emerging. And so in the state of mind in which at the moment of contact our suffering brother says that he is an alcoholic, his thinking is still conditioned by the materialistic world which has contained him and from which he is beginning to emerge. And so he believes, still believes, he is confessing to a social weakness, while we know that in the admission of his weakness lies the potent strength of humility and surrender. In that moment of contact, two lives are momentarily blended as we are filled with a sense of relief, even as great as that of our suffering brother, who at that moment for the first time faces up to the reality of his existence and sloughs off the illusion by which he had lived. His acceptance of himself and our acceptance of him is indeed a great relief. And our emotion at that moment is one of relief with him, to be followed almost immediately by an independent type of emotion, a tremendous surge of joy, not for having given, but for having shared our suffering brother's spiritual relief. For when we sit with our alcoholic brother and deliver the message of the source of our recovery, and as we sense the depth of the suffering, we are reliving our own dark experiences even as we are living his. As we pray for his recovery, we pray for the maintenance of our own. But there is something more than a spiritual relief that grows from the acceptance of our suffering brother, of the reality of his existence and our acceptance of him for what he is. For in the days of our own suffering, we too did not accept life but rejected it. Ours too had been a sense of hostility and a sense of defeat which we thought we could drain away with alcohol. We too had lived in a fierce loneliness filled with a choking feeling of entrapment, meaninglessness, and desperation. And so this moment in time when another human being who now suffers even as we had once suffered, and accepting that which we have to offer him, there is sense of ourselves. And as we watch our brother move toward recovery, we remember in the fullness of our response how we too had ceased rejecting life and accepted it in terms of the very weakness that was to provide us with the strength to transform our individual world. We recall again in that moment of contact the days when we found acceptance within that society of Alcoholics Anonymous, which, followed by our 12-step work, provided us with the courage to face our lives for what these lives really were. Lives based upon the inventory of our true selves. And suddenly we were able to face the anxieties and the terrors from which we formerly sank into the amnesia of alcohol. Self-centeredness was supplanted by self-acceptance. And in that acceptance, the hatred of others and of ourselves disappeared. And as our strength is renewed in our brother's spiritual release, we are reminded of how the meaninglessness of life had disappeared for us when, with acceptance, life suddenly acquired new and real meaning for us. And as we talk in this moment of self-acceptance by our suffering brother and tell him of what he should do to attain the fullness of liberation which we had experienced, we unconsciously are demonstrating to society another great truth. And that is that we cannot rid ourselves of alcoholism any more than we can rid ourselves of any other social ills, unless we really want to and are prepared to work for its attainment. There is a third paradox in AA that stems directly from our 12th step and yet relates itself to the same moment of contact with our suffering brother. All of us recall the well-known war bond slogan, "Give till it hurts." We in AA paradoxically, would pronounce that statement, "Don't give if it hurts." But we have found that we can give and invest our brother with that which we have only when we experience the joy of giving, a giving that is a taking as well, a giving in which a sense of giving up anything is a sense of sacrifice. And sacrifice is fatal. For we have found when there is no joy in the giving and the sharing of the message which brought us our recovery, we lose the power to give. If there is no joy in the giving, the power to give, the opportunity of our suffering brother to accept that which we offer is irreparably lost. Society, in referring to the alcoholic, employs the expression, the enslavement of alcohol. This statement for us is true in a very special sense, paradoxical, if indeed it is true at all. In sober fact, we were never enslaved by alcohol. Alcohol simply served as an escape for us from our enslavement to the false ideals of a materialistic society. Our pride, our self-centeredness, our jealousy, which increased with our insatiable drive to achieve these false ideals, found all too temporary relief in alcohol. And yet, if we accept society's definition of our former state as the enslavement of alcohol, we can no longer resent this enslavement, for it has served to set us free from all the materialistic traps with which the path through the jungle of our society are set. When we were drinking, we were withdrawing from a material basis of life, which, when looked upon at close quarters, made us inevitably recoil. We first had to face materialism as a disease of society before we could free ourselves of the disease of alcoholism, and with it be free of the social ills that had made us alcoholics. For us, perhaps more than for any other people, our material strivings and ambitions, our false pride, our self-centeredness, and our jealousy died hard. And so, in a sense, we owe a unique debt to the so-called enslavement of alcohol. For most human beings who have never suffered as acutely as those who have recovered from the disease of alcoholism, live lives with little purpose and with no patterns that they can discern. And few ever are provided with an opportunity to change these patterns. At the time of our death, we are little different than in the days of our living. For it takes a spiritual explosion in depth, such as the deliverance from alcohol, to change our patterns and liberate us from the materialistic snares in which we were imprisoned. For when we accepted our weakness and ceased nurturing them, we became free. Free to have the courage to deal with our weakness. Free to have the courage to live the real life in place of the illusory one from which we have been delivered. We who use alcohol as an escape are not the only people who are afraid of life, hostile to the world, fleeing from it into loneliness, trying desperately to run from the society that made us socially ill. Millions of human beings who are not alcoholics are living today in an illusory world, nurturing the basic anxieties and insecurities of their human existence, rather than face themselves with courage and humility. Most of us who are not alcoholics have our own brand of escape whiskey, even though it hasn't an alcoholic content. To these people, we can offer as a cure no magic potion, no chemical formula, no powerful drug. We can only demonstrate to them, if we are asked, how to use the primitive tools of humility, honesty, devotion, and love, which indeed are the heart of our 12 steps. There's still another paradoxical statement of human society which has a special application to AA. For within the meaning of this statement lies the basic significance of our convening here together these last 3 days. And that statement is the saying that a chain is as strong as its weakest link. The accepted connotation of this expression is that a chain is strong only if it has no weak link. And the paradox of this statement as applied to AA is that in truth, our chain is as strong as its weakest link. For the endless chain of AA grows in strength to the extent that we are able to reach the weak link, our still suffering alcoholic brothers and sisters. And it is in this paradoxical statement that the assurance of the survival of our society rests. Great civilizations of the past have generally emerged under the energizing force of a generation of strong leaders and a strong people. And these civilizations collapsed when in succeeding generations, men of strength became few, and these civilizations began to wallow in the physical comfort of a materialistic age. Thus, when succeeding generations of men of these civilizations weakened, and the strength of will was sapped, these civilizations crumbled. But the survival of AA depends not on the strength of the generations that lie ahead, but on the existence of weakness in humankind in these succeeding generations.
or the perpetuation of our society is grounded in the so-called weakness of those human beings who escape the materialistic bases of society through the medium of alcohol. Alcoholism, as we know it, is as old as the vineyard and will continue as long as there are grapes on the vine and grain in the field. And because human beings are fallible, there will always be those who will seek grapes and the grain to escape for brief moments from sick society. And men and women in the generations ahead will, as a consequence, continue to suffer from the disease of alcoholism. And so ensure the survival of AA. So long as there are men and women who suffer the ravages of alcoholism and are therefore regarded as weak by society, AA will gather strength through weakness, and we will survive because human suffering through alcoholism will inevitably continue. And so, as we here today complete what we hope will prove an indestructible structure for AA, we are providing for the sick societies of tomorrow. For if we succeed in constructing our edifice soundly, we are assured that which we have built will survive for as long as the weakness implicit in the suffering of the alcoholic continues as a phenomenon of human existence. And so, when the fact of suffering through alcoholism, our strength to weakness, means that in the structure of AA that we are completing today, we are ensuring the existence not only of a means for the recovery of future generations of alcoholics, but a means which the sick societies of tomorrow can use if they will to rebuild themselves into healthy organisms. They need only watch the demonstration of our use of the primitive tools of humility, honesty, devotion, and love, our 12 steps. Faith, as we know it, is born out of acute suffering. Only an alcoholic knows how deep is his suffering and how rich is his deliverance. Already countless human beings who are not alcoholics have been attracted by the way of life that is AA. And the older our society becomes, the greater will be our impact on the materialistic world about us. And yet, as Bill has so often said, we are not missionaries. We seek to convert no one. We have a faith, but we are not a religion. We seek only by example to show that human society can function in terms other than the unfortunate materialistic socially accepted ideals of the society in which we now live. And it is because we know the tremendous impact that AA can have on the generations that will follow us that we have been so painstaking in the completion of the structure of an AA, a structure that Bill so aptly describes as a legacy. But this legacy has a string to it. And this string is that we are granted the use of this legacy for our lifetime upon the condition that we not only look after it, but increase its spiritual content for the generations that will follow us. And each succeeding generation, as it receives this legacy, must too protect it if they wish to employ it and gain life by it, and then pass the legacy on to the next generation with a similarly increased spiritual content. We here dare not fail. For the alcoholic within AA, by reason of his suffering and his deliverance, has been granted the great opportunity of ensuring that there is ever on display before a world of men a way of life that by its affirmation of the practice of human decency, human kindness, and human love as a way to preserve life will ensure that no society of men need ever go through the dark ages collectively as we once walked in the darkness individually. For this great structure of AA, and only a non-alcoholic dare make this statement, can serve by example as a stimulating force for the transformation of those materialistic societies that will take form long after the days of our years are ended. And so, this first generation in the life of A&A now draws to a close. It is rich in its space, large in its numbers, and dedicated to its purposes. It leaves a legacy to human society that we who have journeyed to St. Louis are privileged to see completed. And yet, we here have been granted only the right to continue to give and to labor and to work in preserving and enhancing the great structure of AA. And as we can only preserve our own well-being by constant exertion to help our still suffering alcoholic brothers and sisters bring themselves back to life, so we must exert ourselves in the years that are still left to us to increasingly insulate the great structure of AA from the ravages of human fallibility. And if we succeed, generations from now, men and women standing before AA groups around the world, repeating the words we have so often said ourselves, "I am an alcoholic," will talk of this day in St. Louis and of this first generation of AA, and they will say as they talk of your sufferings and of your deliverance, "Yes, in their suffering they thought they suffered for their own deliverance. In fact, they suffered for ours."